This is Greater LA, the show on KCRW that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiatakis.
Are they going to be entering into this bus and then loaded up and heading down to jail? Do you know what they did to get arrested?
Curfew violation or unlawful assembly.
Okay.
One of the two.
And so I'm speaking with a LAPD officer.
Sergeant Tajari.
On the streets of LA, there was a lot of this. Protesters marched. The clock turned six. Curfew began. People went to jail. Over the course of the week, there were thousands of examples and video evidence and accusations of officers beating people with batons and firing tear gas and rubber bullets to get to that point. Well, now, L.A. City Attorney and the L.A. County District Attorney say there won't be prosecutions of those cases. But at least in the case of the city of Los Angeles, protesters won't simply be exonerated. There will be some strings attached. Mike Feuer is L.A. City Attorney. Mr. Feuer, thanks for being with us to talk about it.
It's good to meet you, Steve.
Just to reiterate, no prosecutions, right? No court appearances, but your office says there will be requirements in exchange that are, quote, productive and not punitive. What does that mean exactly?
Well, here's what we're looking at now. It is extremely important at this really crucial moment that we find ways to bring people together. And we need to stop the talking at each other, the us against them, and promote real listening to each other. Law enforcement and protester and other key stakeholders in the community, because the issues are focused on law enforcement, but issues of racism and bias in our system transcend law enforcement issues. So our office is in the process of creating a series of alternative programs for people who have been involved in these curfew issues and unlawful assembly or failure to disperse issues. And I'm very optimistic that we're going to find ways to encourage people to actually participate in that conversation. Ferguson came and went, and we lost an opportunity, I think, to create a sustainable discussion that ultimately results in real action. And
there was Ferguson, there was Baltimore and Chicago and L.A. and so many other cities where things like this keep happening. And I wonder if you get to the point where the people who were arrested for peacefully protesting feel like this is sort of an indictment, not the legal term, but an indictment on them, you know, that they're the ones that have to prove that they're in for the educating and not the police department, which obviously has been accused, or at least we've seen before our eyes on video, instigating things like this. Is everyone going to come to this table with open ears, is what I'm asking you?
Well, that is our objective, to be sure, bringing law enforcement and protester together. And by the way, a protester under this approach isn't required to establish her or his innocence in this. This is about taking this moment where we are and advancing the ball in ways that haven't happened before. Our office, in its history, has never tried to create these formats of getting people together to actually advance a discussion that's about as relevant to our society right now as any discussion has ever been. Issues of race and lovers and so on.
Certainly. We spoke with an attorney for the National Lawyers Guild of L.A. This is a woman named Rachel Steinbeck, and she had these concerns. I want you to listen, if you don't mind, sir.
The curfew is and was illegal. They know that. They know that they can't win these cases in court, and that's why they're creating this alternative. We do not believe there should be an alternative. All of the arrested protesters were engaging in protected free speech, and their cases should be not filed or dismissed immediately without conditions.
All right, let's unpack that for a second. They know that it was illegal. The curfew was illegal. The ACLU was set to file suit and may at the ready, perhaps if there's another curfew established. They know that they can't win these cases in court, that all of the arrested protesters were engaging in protected free speech. How do you respond to that?
So let's take those points in turn. First, with regards to the curfew, there was a lawsuit filed, as you point out, and so I can't discuss the specifics of that litigation. I can say this. I think curfews are a very last resort and to be extremely rarely invoked. Curfews in general are inimical to a free society. But there are moments, and I think we saw a moment about a week ago, when curfews here and elsewhere played a role, not the only, they weren't the only ingredient, but they played a role in creating some space, kind of a timeout on the street. And for many reasons, the curfew just one of them, we have seen the protests, which always had been predominantly peaceful, be almost exclusively peaceful since. So with regards to the curfew, the approach that we're taking has nothing to do with the litigation surrounding the lawfulness of the curfew. And it certainly has nothing to do with our office's capacity to prove up these cases in court.
But she says that...
I don't care what she says about that. This has nothing to do with a decision based on whether we could prove up cases in court, and nothing to do with whether the curfew is adjudicated to have been lawful or not. This has to do with...
But she says there should not be an alternative.
I understand
there should
that.
Not be an alternative.
And we are in the process of evaluating how best to create as much involvement, participation in the system that we're describing as possible, as much participation in these conversations as possible. And we have already, I've already been in conversations, preliminary conversations with one key advocate for the protesters to see over the next number of days if we can find common ground on an approach that recognizes the values everybody's trying to promote here and advances the ball forward. You know, for our office, this is about really staking out an approach that hasn't been engaged in anywhere in the United States, as far as I know, where an office like mine, which among other things prosecutes, is playing a leading role in trying to convene people who traditionally have not been in the same room, have not listened carefully to each other. And so we have these very polarized positions being taken when actually, I think, there can be common ground found if people really listen to each other. So that's the approach we're taking here. It does not have to do with whether we could prove up a case in court. That's kind of beside the point here. What is the point is, can our office be constructive, and can advocates like the advocate you interviewed help us try to find ways to establish that common ground that can actually advance the ball for our whole society?
Let's hear from her one more time. We have another bite from our interview.
So sure. If the city attorney, the district attorney, and the regional city attorneys don't simply agree to not move forward on these low-level cases, we will be prepared to go to court to take these cases to trial and to prevail at trial.
So she says they've lined up lawyers who are ready to take these cases pro bono. Is the judicial system ready for all of that?
Well, we'll see if it ever has to come to that. Because as I mentioned, our goal is not to be punitive at all. And our goal is not to be in a position where we are litigating the merits of these individual cases as opposed to taking advantage of a very important moment that has been rekindled by the protesters to establish some very important principles about having a society that isn't pervaded with racism, having law enforcement and people in their communities that law enforcement serves actually recognize that they need each other, and so on. That's the moment we're trying to galvanize here, as opposed to thinking of this in, I think, a small way. The large picture here is we have a society on the edge, a society that could be at a breaking point, or it could be at a very important positive point where finally people are listening to each other. And shouldn't we use this moment to take advantage of that energy in a positive way? That's what we're trying to create.
Well, I think the protesters will tell you, though, that they want the police and officers to listen to them as well. And
sure.
What they're saying and what we're seeing in some of the videos are police using excessive force in getting these protests broken up or to get people onto, buses to take them to jail. I mean, are you looking into possible repercussions, even arrests perhaps, for LAPD officers who assaulted protesters with batons or shot them with rubber bullets and tear gas?
So, see, two things. First of all, and this is the most important point, none of us in America, let alone here in Los Angeles, should for one moment excuse an act of violence of one person against another. And that includes, very importantly, instances where police engage in that conduct. And, you know, I've seen images across the United States that are appalling when it comes, and this is well beyond the absolutely heinous murder of George Floyd, but in jurisdictions in the aftermath of this across the country. And then we saw the president of the United States, for goodness sake, calling the military in Washington to try to break up a peaceful protest for a photo opportunity.
We all saw it, and I, I just want to know before we wrap up, because we've got to go, Mr. City Attorney, are you now dedicated to making sure that those who are on the police side, who may have instigated some of this violence, are also brought to justice?
Well,
yes or no?
What I started to say is that it would fall to the district attorney rather than to my office.
All right. Mike Feuer, City Attorney, thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks for joining us.
Bye.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Back now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Those are the sounds of protests over the last week and a half all over Los Angeles and surrounding areas, from Hollywood to Compton to downtown LA to the West Side. And the protests over the death of George Floyd and other black people at the hands of police happened in the middle of a pandemic, at a time when you're being told to stay home and, most importantly, stay distant from others to slow the spread of the novel coronavirus. Instead, thousands crammed into the concrete canyons of LA, chanting and yelling in close proximity day after day. And you have to wonder about the health risk of getting COVID-19. Dr. Oliver T. Brooks is president of the National Medical Association. He's the chief medical officer at Watts Healthcare. Dr. Brooks, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
It is a high calling, but it is also a big health risk. I mean, from a public health perspective, are you concerned that there will be a spike in COVID cases because of these demonstrations?
I would say that I do have some concern regarding a spike as it relates to protests. That being stated, one has to really look at what the true issues are. People are protesting what I consider a chronic pandemic, chronic low-level pandemic, and that is police brutality. They're doing that in the face of an acute pandemic, COVID-19. And so what you're looking at is where you have thousands that die every year at the hands of police as a chronic pandemic, year over year over year, then you have 1,000 dying a day in the United States from COVID-19. They are both public health crises. And of interest, a black man in his lifetime is likely is a 1 in 1,000 chance of dying from police brutality versus a white 1 in 2,500. So 2.5 more times likely to die at the hands of police. And again, of interest, a black person in this country is 2.5 times more likely to be hospitalized and die from COVID-19. So the parallels are striking. This is a public health crisis. This moment is now. May 25th, when George Floyd was killed, essentially, what I'm going to say on national TV, since everyone has seen it, it rekindled a smoldering ember that is now a wildfire. And honestly speaking, I do not believe that these protests should or can be stopped. From a public health perspective, there are real issues with protesting. There's the likely lack of social distancing. When you're protesting, you're projecting your voice. So beyond that 6-foot distance, they may release tear gas, which makes you cough, irritates the eyes. Those are manners in which you have more high spread of the virus. People are emotional. They may forget their protective activities. They don't all wear masks, as you likely have seen from video clips. So these are all areas of concern from a public health perspective regarding COVID-19.
I guess my question would be, what do you do in a situation like this? Do you just not protest?
Right. So you asked the $64,000 question. And in medicine, it's always benefit risk. I mean, a cancer patient taking chemotherapy has significant risk of side effects from the chemotherapeutic agent, but at the same time, it's killing the cancer. So right now, my position is that the time is right for protesting. So I believe that the protest is appropriate. You see right now in Congress, they're introducing legislation to ban the chokehold, to mandate body cams, and to have no more racial profiling. So there are effects. There are results that are coming out of this. At the same time, since as a doctor, my first duty is to my patient and to my community, it's a tough call, but I'm going to have to lean. I've spoken to a number of African-Americans, physicians and non-physicians, and the general consensus is we need to protest. So what do you do when you protest? And what I believe is it comes back to the protections as best that you can. Wear a mask. Wash your hands. Stay as distant as you can. Even for Blacks, there's some data that shows that we tend to be more vitamin D deficient. Take your vitamin D, somewhere around 4,000 international units a day. There's discussion about even caravanning. There have been some caravan protests. But these are challenging times, and it is important for your audience to understand that. And there are no easy answers. This is unprecedented. This has never happened before. So we have to go day by day.
When do you think you're going to know whether the protests have created a whole new spike in cases? Is that because there's a lag, right?
There is a lag. So it can take up to 2 weeks for you to show signs of COVID-19. So were you protesting today, Monday the 8th? You may not show any signs till July, June is going to be 22nd. So I would say give it a couple of weeks. It is in the summer now. There is some evidence that the virus does not like heat. The virus does not spread as readily outdoors. The virus prefers dry, so you get more humidity in the summer, but not necessarily in Los Angeles. So these are all factors. So to answer your question, I would say looking at data coming out in June, in general, that gives us, 3 weeks from now to go through the month to see if there is, in fact, a spike in our area, in this region.
You think this moment feels different than the past? I mean, I you can't even count anymore. You know, Michael Brown and Freddie Gray and, you know, Ezell Ford here in L.A., so many different names that we've seen, Rodney King. I mean, I'm asking you, you're a medical doctor. I'm asking you, a socio-political question, right? Is this different?
Right. So as president of the National Medical Association, we advocate for African-American physicians and the African-American community. So this is a public health crisis, and this time is different. The officer put his knee to the neck of George Floyd for 8 minutes and 46 seconds. I don't believe they beat Rodney King for 8 minutes and 46 seconds. Number two is when you look at Ahmaud Arbery, he was hunted and murdered. Breonna Taylor was shot in her own home. So it's just more poignant. I also feel that there's just this pressure now that we're feeling because of Blacks dying at 2.5 times the rate from COVID-19. So it's not additive, but is exponential. It's 1 times 1, which is 1 in math, but you do 1 times 1, and the way we feel it, it's going to 11. And you do note that it is worldwide. So there is a growing recognition that this just cannot continue. And people are showing courage by protesting, not just worried about police brutality, but getting a potentially fatal infection. So this just shows how this is different. It has touched the nerve.
You think it's also different because, you know, so many people have been cooped up for the past couple of months. We've had these stay-at-home orders. You haven't really been outside a lot. You haven't been to work. You may have lost your job. I mean, there's just a lot of tension.
Yes. So if people are emotionally frazzled. People, as you stated, people have lost their jobs. Those who have jobs have been inside. And maybe part of being inside, they're more connected to things that are audio, video, in other words, things that are being broadcast. So, yeah, it's all of those. It's all of that added up. And then when you're inside, the reason you're inside because you're worried about going outside because you may die. And if you're Black, you're dying at a higher rate. So people that I have been speaking with have been emotionally drained prior to May 25th. So when you throw that on there, it was the straw that broke the camel's back. And it wasn't a straw, it was a log that broke the camel's back. So this, there was a release. That's what this is. I mean, it is a release of energies that have been pent up, as you stated, from being sheltering up in place. Some people who are not working. Some people know others that have died from COVID and are angry.
Dr. Oliver T. Brooks is president of the National Medical Association and the chief medical officer over at Watts Healthcare. Sir, thank you for your time today.
Thank you, and thank you for hosting this forum and bringing this to the forefront with a spotlight.
Well, we've seen the images and heard the chants. We're more than a week now into the protests over the killing of George Floyd. Beverly Hills, Fairfax District, Santa Monica, downtown, Hollywood. If you're among the thousands of Angelenos who've taken to the streets, you might notice a couple of other people scattered on the sides of the crowd, wearing red, with duct tape crosses on their shirts.
You know, my mother used to say, always look for the helpers. Anybody who is coming into a place where there's a tragedy. Oh, baby, how do you know? Because if you look for the helpers, you'll know that there's hope.
Meet Hassan Galladeri.
We got milk, magnesia, we got blood stoppers, we have sterile cleaning stuff. We're also doing damage assessment to see what gets destroyed so that we can send cleanup crews in the morning.
5 years ago, Galladeri started a group called Feed the Streets LA. Normally, their mission is to bring food and water to people living on the streets. But now, dozens of them stand quietly amid chanting masses, offering water and first aid help to any protesters or even police who need it.
We haven't had to treat anyone yet, but there are no EMTs out here. We just want to be ready and prepared for anything to happen.
Galladeri came up with the idea after the first night of protests. KCRW's Kaylee Wells has more on his inspiration to take action.
When I met Hassan Galladeri, he was in a group of five unofficial first aid responders at a protest in Hollywood. He wore huge sunglasses, a backwards baseball cap, and a button-down over his white tank top with a red duct tape cross on it. His short sleeves exposed a complicated collection of tattoos down his arms. He told me he supported the movement, but that doesn't mean he's anti-cop.
This is a peaceful, chill platform for members of the community to contribute to the movement without being too far on one side or the other. Like, for me, I need this. Otherwise, like, I could be the bad guy, you know? I don't want to be the bad guy.
I didn't understand what he meant about being the bad guy until he got back to his apartment and explained.
So my first instincts usually are not the best ones. My first reaction was like, oh, we're rising up against the police. And so my first thoughts is acts of aggression, you know. I want to act aggressively against law enforcement. Not over like any kind of cause or anything. Like I have the Joker in me. That's my natural reaction.
Galladeri says those instincts were bred when he was a kid. He was born and raised in West LA. He watched the Rodney King protests when he was five. He says he spent his teenage years on probation and getting into trouble. Now he's 34, and he proudly calls himself 7 years sober.
I got sober off of drugs and alcohol, but for me, I had to get sober and change my lifestyle choices. My lifestyle choices are much more gnarlier than any drugs or alcohol, like how I live and how I choose to operate and make money and just be in the streets. I had to change everything I've ever learned since the age of like 12.
Now he says standing in the crowd of protesters, he'll help a police officer just as he would anyone else.
If a police officer was separated from his unit and he was being harmed and injured and people were trying to hurt him, I would shield him with my body.
Which is why when he saw the looters hit stores in the Fairfax District, He borrowed his roommate's broom and dustpan and headed over there the next morning. He said hundreds of people walked by to videotape the destruction. Occasionally a person would stop, but they thought he was being paid to help. One asked if he was cleaning up his own shop. This exchange is on Instagram.
Nah, I'm just helping clean up. I'm just cleaning up. I grew up here. This is my city, you know what I mean? And this ain't the way.
But the protesting didn't stop with the Fairfax District, and Galladerry needed to be involved.
I asked myself, what could I do to volunteer? What could I do to be of service? And I said, you know what? People are probably going to get hurt. I should bring my paramedic like bug out bag, which I am not a certified anything. Literally, I have no certification in anything at all. I just like have been in situations where I've, you know, seen some shit.
Now his group Feed the Streets LA is sending dozens of volunteers to protest to do the same thing. He said the group's food and clothing drives scaled back because of the COVID pandemic, and he wanted a neutral platform for people like him who want to support the movement without picking a side.
People are scared. A lot of people are scared, but like they don't want to make a sign. They don't want to throw their fist in the air. They don't want to yell the police, but they still want to help out. So like Feed the Streets provided like a good way for them to come from like a chill zone.
Galladerry says after he cleaned up his lifestyle 7 years ago, he had a lot of energy and nowhere to focus it. For now, it's channeled into his makeshift medical bag, into the bottles of water he carries into the crowd, and into the duct tape cross he wears on his chest. For KCRW, I'm Kaylee Wells.